From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We are joined, as always, with our super producer, Paul Mission Control Deccant. Most importantly, you are here, and that makes this Stuff They Don't Want You to Know. This is our coronavirus, COVID-19 episode, or part two in what unfortunately will be a continuing series. As we've been doing recently, we wanted to connect with our fellow listeners on Twitter. So it's time again for Twitter roll call.
Today's message comes from Grumman600, who says, New Jersey man charged with terroristic threats for allegedly coughing on Wegmans worker. It's a headline. And then he sends us a link. And that Wegmans, I think, is a chain of grocery stores, right, in New Jersey?
Yeah, that's correct. This tweet was interesting to me because it's part of a larger conversation that's happening now, at least in the U.S. And it's the idea that people who are knowingly positive for COVID-19 and choosing to go to public gatherings or public spaces may be charged with under laws that would ordinarily apply to terrorism. As wild as that sounds, that is in the cards.
Well, it's sort of like if you knowingly have HIV and, you know, infect someone without telling them, that you can be charged with a crime for that. Absolutely. Right.
Right, right. Yeah. The most extreme example of that so far as we record, which we should say is Wednesday, March 25th, the most extreme example of that came from Japan, where there was a single male individual got tested, knew he was positive for COVID-19, and purposely went out to all the bars and restaurants he could find to try and spread it. Very strange. Very Jeez. Strange.
Ugh, God.
Our next Twitter shout out comes from Fracky Fire, who has written into the show before. Fracky, you said, currently catching up on some conspiracy stuff episodes and listening to the one on COVID-19 from a few weeks ago is a strange experience. It's like a time capsule of the moment right before everything went crazy. And, you know, this struck a chord with me. I was wondering if it struck a chord with you guys as well. I went back and re-listened, and we did the best we could with the facts we had.
Yeah, it's most certainly like a time capsule. I remember, because it took about a week for that episode to publish after we recorded it. Mm-hmm. And we could feel the winds of change coming as we were waiting for it to get out there in the wild. And by the time it went live, we were like, wow, this has really evolved since then. And now it's almost like a completely different situation, a completely different world that we're living in. That's why we're making this episode.
You know, what's interesting to me is how quickly our brains adapt and normalize the completely abnormal. Maybe it's just me, but even like going and walking around in grocery stores now, everyone's wearing these, you know, rubber gloves and these masks. And I don't find myself recoiling in, you know, complete and utter terror. I literally had my kid with me at the grocery store and I'm seeing this, and somehow your brain kind of tricks you into thinking this is like normal all of a sudden, you know, and it feels like something out of a science fiction movie.
Yeah, it's an interesting quirk of our species, and we've talked about it a little bit in the past. It's astounding and in no small part disturbing how quickly things become normalized. That's why we throw around phrases like the new normal and so on. It also makes me think of the old, what's that old saw, that it takes 21 days to form a habit and 21 to break one? It's interesting. I don't know if the science backs it up, but it is true. You know, you're usually about 7 days away from something that would have sounded crazy last week being absolutely status quo the next week. And it's something, you know, I'm glad you brought that up, because it's something we need to remember, not just us podcasting and not just us listening, but everyone we know. We need to remind them that this doesn't have to be the normal. We're going through some crazy times, but the fight's not over yet. In fact, As we'll learn in today's episode, the fight in a very real way is just beginning. Would you guys agree?
Most certainly. I'm oscillating between feeling like this will just be our new normal. And when I say that, I don't mean necessarily, you know, being sequestered at home, but the new steps we take in interacting with each other on a personal basis, on something as simple as using headphones in a shared studio, or, you know, when you think about getting takeout and maybe cleaning the bag or something, or the containers when you go shopping, cleaning that before you bring it into your house. It does feel like we're so aware now of the possibilities. It doesn't have to be a pandemic for us to have these memories now.
No,
what we were going through.
And it's so visceral now, because it's like it literally has just kind of reminded us how vulnerable we all are as humans. And if anything, it's just kind of like caused us to sort of rethink, not to sound too like hippy dippy about it, but our place in the universe and how we're, it's all so fragile, you know, and like things could just take a turn like on a dime like this. And it's just really kind of a wake up call, not to mention some of the issues with the government and the issues with like healthcare, and sort of bringing to full attention like how fragile our economy is and how it just takes something like this. You know, a germ to bring it all crashing down. Like, that's the part that really freaks me out.
Yeah, it's important to remember that despite our own incredibly narcissistic focus on the human species, we are one of a multitude of different life forms that lives here. And, you know, it's funny, Matt and I were talking about this on a an episode that came out recently about giants. And there was this notion that came up in our discussion about how Earth, especially if you go with the Gaia hypothesis, Earth is a superorganism. It is hungry, you know, and the works of man are not near as permanent as we may like to believe. This is a level reset. You know, one of the most troubling things about the current pandemic is that we have to understand, as a species, nations, ideologies, religions aside, that this sort of thing has occurred in the past. It will occur again. We can prepare for it. We can try to mitigate it, but we cannot prevent it. Something like this will happen again. We just happen to be alive at a time when history is being written in the first pandemic of the hyper-connected age of social media. And we're glad you're here, you know, and we're grateful for it. We're also back. Now, for everybody who's listened to our previous episode on the coronavirus, we noted that due to the ongoing nature of the event, we would inevitably need to return with an update, a new look at how the pandemic evolved. And I don't know if you guys went back and listened to that previous episode. The World Health Organization had not officially declared COVID-19 a pandemic, but it seemed like all but a done deal, even when we were recording back then. So what we'd like to do today is update you with the facts, fiction, and conspiracy theories that are springing up across the planet in reaction to this global infection. So the best way for us to do that is to start with what we know today, March 25th, 2020. Here are the facts.
So let's just do a little bit of housekeeping with kind of the lay of the land where we are today. We absolutely have a better understanding of kind of a snapshot of what's going on globally, and it's not great. It's pretty ugly. We have confirmed cases in the U.S. That have surged tenfold, likely over 50,000 as we record this episode. And the number of confirmed infections globally has reached a whopping 452,241.
Right. And one thing that we don't hear about as often as perhaps we should would be the positive side of this infection process. 113,121 people are confirmed to have contracted coronavirus and to have recovered. Of course, it's not all, you know, angel farts and trumpets and harpsichords, because some of those people have serious lasting damage to their respiratory system. And the virus, as we know, is fatal.
Yeah, it's killed over 18,200 people around the world just so far. And it really is, it's astounding. And it's troubling because these are just the cases that we know. This is the thing that is really terrifying, actually, because they're confirmed numbers from people who got tested that we have identified as having this disease, of being infected by this virus and then having any kind of outcome, whether recovery or even death.
Well, and as we know, I mean, a big problem is the lack of available tests and how only people with really serious symptoms are even getting access to tests, unless you're like Don Cheadle or something. It seems like all kinds of celebrity news of people confirming they don't have it because they somehow got a test. I wonder if it's just like really expensive private healthcare or how they get access to that. But in general, us mortals are not going to be able to get tested unless we are presenting some serious symptoms. And I even read a study that, you know, there's so much stuff coming out every day. This may have been debunked, but that people who are asymptomatic could well have a higher viral load and are more prone to shedding the virus and spreading it, which is a big part of why this quarantine thing is so necessary, because you just don't know who has it.
Right. There are a couple points that I want to hit there. First, I think I read some of the same stuff. I know it's not 100% proven, but even if that speculation turns out to be debunked, it's still a fantastic idea to self-isolate, or whatever PC term your government is using to avoid saying the Q word. It's still a great idea to do that, because you don't have to. I know it's a big ask, but don't worry necessarily about saving your own life. Remember that if you don't care about saving your own life, remember that you may be saving the lives of literally hundreds of thousands of strangers just because of the way this thing transmits through carriers. And I appreciate the point about testing. You're right, Matt. The numbers that we have are sobering, but we should add that massive, frankly terrifying caveat. Those are only the confirmed numbers, and they are much, much lower than what's actually happening. In a lot of countries, including the United States, to your point, Noel, the average person has no realistic chance to get tested for COVID-19. And of course, that means many, many people are spreading this infection. Just to hit home, I predict that the numbers we're going to see here in the U.S. at least are going to be indicative of a case that, like, it'll show us that someone you know has or had COVID. That's what we're going to look at if we see the trends. And if we get some transparent numbers, which, you know, a lot of countries don't want to do, Russia being one, the United States being another. So, like, let's look at the global trends. I think we mentioned earlier the official confirmed number of people who have contracted this. It's north of 400,000. But what's important here is to realize how we arrived at that number. So 400,000 something, and the number keeps ticking up. Of those 400,000, more than 100,000 cases were confirmed in the past 3 days. So from March 22nd to March 25th, 100,000 people, a fourth of the total official number, were confirmed. That means there have to be more out there.
Man, it is pretty terrifying. I'm just going to give you guys a quick example just to kind of speak to this as we're going down here. I know personally someone who is in an age group and in a health range that is not considered a high vulnerability for COVID to be fatal for them. And they are fairly sure. They quoted me 80 to 90% positive that they have COVID-19 as well as their significant other. And they even live very close to a hospital and a hospital system here in Atlanta. But they do not have access to a test, and they cannot get tested to confirm whether or not they have it. So they just have to essentially ride it out until it becomes bad enough that they need hospitalization.
Are they showing serious symptoms or what?
Yes, but not the intense respiratory stuff that's associated with the fatality.
Got it.
Or the fatal nature of what it turns into. So it's just one of those things where, especially in this country, that is what we're dealing with. Probably, I can't even estimate the number of people who are in that same or similar situation where they know they're sick, It feels as though it is this, but they don't have access to a test. And that's exactly what we're about to talk about here, about what various countries are doing to prevent further spread, or at least, as they say, flatten the curve.
Right, right. And we'll spend some time on that too. We have enough data now that we can look at the different and distinct responses from several countries. For instance, on the extreme authoritarian end, we have countries like Singapore, South Korea, and Israel. So Singapore is kind of an honor student here. They used contact tracing technology, meaning that they were proactively testing people. And if you tested positive, then they would find every place you had been, every person you had interacted with, and they would also test them. And then if they tested positive, they would also test everyone that person interacted with, every place they went. Imagine that happening in the United States. It's almost anathema to the culture here. Israel did the same thing. Of course, one of the big differences with Israel and Singapore is that Israel is still in opposition to Palestine. And Palestine is something that has been, you know, like the Hong Kong protest, it's less and less in the news as the news is increasingly related to COVID. To your point about flattening the curve, Matt, China actually does seem to be flattening the curve. Granted, though, to flatten that curve, they did things that would never happen in the United States, such as, I think we talked about this on a previous show, such as physically welding doors of apartment buildings shut while people were inside. Did you guys hear about that?
Oh my God. No,
it's definitely an extreme version of what's attempting to be enacted here in the United States, where it's like, you know, official orders from your state's governor or a mayor of a city to like stay inside. But forcing it to that level.
But there's even caveats in the soft mandates we're getting from our leaders, right? I mean, obviously going to the grocery store is acceptable. And there's even, you know, mention of it's okay to take a walk around the neighborhood, walk your dog, go to the park. I honestly feel like because so many people are home in my neighborhood, I'm seeing more people walking around than I typically would, you know, on a work from home day in normal circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like people are absolutely like getting out and, you know, being a little too loose with those mandates, kind of, you know?
100%. You know, it's the way that information circulates nowadays, the way that we're all hyper-connected, makes it easy for us to get information fatigue. And it also means that we're looking at a scenario where people might not take this threat seriously until someone that they personally know dies, which is a very grim and absolutist way to look at it. But it also is a valid observation based on what we know about human psychology. If you are, like many of us in the States, one of the people worried about the U.S. slipping as a global superpower in recent years, then you may find cold comfort in the realization that the United States is set to become a world leader once again in one particularly dubious field. Soon, depending on how things play out, we will be a world leader acknowledged in COVID-19 infection, which means possibly, depending on our infrastructure, we will become a world leader in COVID-related deaths. That's a grim note, but don't worry, the story's not over yet. We're going to pause for a word from our sponsor, and then we'll return to walk through some possible scenarios for the future. These are not predictions, we should say. And we're back. So this is the big question. It's one of the things on everybody's mind. What does the future hold for our species, for the countries in which we live, for our families, our friend groups, our loved ones? I don't know. How do you guys want to do it? You want to talk about the bad scenarios first and end with the good, or you want to go to the good just to give us a little bit of levity?
You want to end on the positive?
Yeah, why not? Bad news first, right?
Sure, I think so. Get it out of the way.
Yeah, yeah, good call. So bad news first. Here in the U.S., we can talk about this country specifically, unemployment numbers have spiked. How much have they spiked? That is literally something the federal government doesn't want you to know because they don't want people to panic. If you are in the U.S. and hearing this, think about it. Do you know someone who was recently laid off or found themselves unemployed? I would say that the answer is, your answer is probably 60% likely to be yes at this point. I can't speak for you guys, but I personally know multiple people who have found themselves suddenly out of a job, and some estimates have projected that the total unemployment numbers will be 30%. However, the Trump administration, we should note, has specifically asked state leadership to hold off on releasing any recent unemployment numbers. This has drawn, as you can imagine, a pretty vocal criticism from his political opponents.
Well, another thing that's drawing a pretty vocal criticism is the Trump administration's pushing this stance that, hey, everything will be fine by Easter. We need to open back up for business, you know, and maybe only just the most at-risk people should stay home. I mean, that's not even taking into consideration the fact that people could not know they have it and go out. I mean, obviously, the economic, fallout is horrible, but isn't it just going to get worse if people go out and return back to business as usual and are sick and continue to spread this thing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well said. Because one of the primary goals for that somewhat arbitrary Easter normalcy date is to preserve the failing economy or to save it, right? But that could lead us to another worst case scenario wherein maybe the wave was starting to dip, but we called it normal too soon, and then we get hit with a second wave. If you'll recall, one example that's been brought up a lot lately is the Spanish flu epidemic of 1918. The real name for that is the Spanish flu epidemic of 1918 to 1919. That means this is probably not a timeout for a month scenario. And if we call it too early, then we may just exacerbate the problems we sought to avoid. In addition to unemployment and a second wave of infection, I would say also this is going to be tremendously damaging to people who already lived in oppressed or disadvantaged situations. I believe at the same time, SNAP, which is food assistance, is on the cutting board. We may also see, people with disabilities being unable to get the services and the treatment that they need. This is looking like a terrible situation if we're going down the negative rabbit hole. What else do you guys think?
Well, I would say, but at the same time, we're seeing movements within our very divided government in the United States, at least here, to unite a little bit and give some kind of at least small assistance to everybody across the board. And in a way, it's this move towards a bit of socialism, a bit of not authoritarianism, but moving towards like attempting to let the government kind of help everybody in a way that we haven't really seen since the Great Depression, honestly. Or when some tax breaks were given in 2008 during that downturn. It's that I would say is hopeful for everybody, even the people who are least served by the government in those areas. But at the same time, if you think about the restaurant, anyone working in the hospitality sectors in this country right now, just there are no jobs there right now. It just doesn't exist, or at least it's dwindling to the fact of a complete drought in that area. And those are the people who need things like SNAP that you're talking about, Ben, people who are or potentially need something like that.
Well, and this whole idea of like this sort of half measure of giving households $1,000, something like that, a one time thing. That's not going to do much if they're behind on their rent, months behind. And I believe a lot of states and counties have put a moratorium on evictions, but not like a rent moratorium, and you're still going to owe that back rent. Like, you know, you can't be kicked out and they can't shut off your water. But what's the full measure here? You know, it feels to me like it's a Band-Aid to say, here's $1,000, go with God. But it's just going to create this ripple effect. It just feels like it's sort of a hollow gesture. But I see what you're saying, Matt. It is pointing to a level of cooperation and a level of like open-minded thinking in a direction that this particular administration has very much maligned. You know?
Well, whatever administration. I'm sorry, Ben. Last thing here. Just to me, it speaks to people maybe at least seeing with an external threat in this way, very much Watchmen style. Like maybe it is worth helping those among us that need the most help, even though we sit in, you know, those people sit in their high towers to make those decisions. If we are truly seeing the unemployment numbers, like Ben was saying at the top of this discussion, the unemployment numbers, if we got to see them as they truly were and as they are going to be over the next few months, I think it's going to be a harrowing thing that will hopefully push everybody towards helping each other out.
I agree. That's absolutely a silver lining that I hope is true as well.
Yeah, this is interesting because one thing we need to emphasize is that if you look at the population of the United States and if you look at the on-the-ground economy, so not the Wall Street's future trading, not the stock market that's getting bailed out unsuccessfully, we should note with some schadenfreude. If you look at the economy that matters to people on the ground, then it was not a healthy body when this infection entered. There is a, you know, it's often said that a large share of people in the United States couldn't cover an emergency $400 expense. Now, economists, practitioners of what's called the dismal science often have their own political agendas. So you'll hear people on various policy platforms say that's not entirely true. But what is, you know, but whatever their opinion or their agenda is, the simple fact of the matter is that even if COVID-19 never hit, financially, a lot of people are in dire straits. Student loans are affecting a young demographic of this country at such a massive scale that they're, you know, not having kids. They're not buying houses. They're laboring under something that even bankruptcy won't erase. A single medical emergency can render even a well-to-do American household with two income earners, all the jazz, it can render them bankrupt. They will be out on the street. Again, that is all before this pandemic hit. And now, to your point, Matt, maybe people are unifying a little bit more because they're starting to realize how bad things were before this began. Like, what's that old joke? I'm sure it's a meme that you guys have seen before where someone says, they're talking to a cashier and they say, wow, you know, here the economy is great. Employment numbers are way up. And the cashier says, yeah, tell me about it. I have three jobs myself. I hate to laugh because maybe it's not the appropriate time for gallows humor, but if depending on how this is handled, we could very easily enter a depression. And I don't want to be alarmist, but it's something that we all need to be cognizant of in the coming weeks and months.
Well, and the distribution of wealth, too, that we keep hearing about how, you know, the top 1% or whatever. I mean, it really is. This is exposing that rot, kind of, and how there's so many people that are just being eviscerated by this. My ex-wife, who I'm very, very close with, she's a massage therapist. Gone. No business. It's over. You know, I mean, she had to shut her shop down. Her husband works in the film industry. Shuttered every single production. No work. You know, we're very lucky that we're able to keep doing what we're doing from home. I mean, we're incredibly lucky. I think, knock on wood, every day. But I know many, many people that are affected by this directly. I have a question for you guys. How do you feel about the sort of othering and the race baiting elements that are starting to pop up, where this idea of this as the quote unquote Chinese flu and like already setting the cards up to blame an other for this and to create an adversary that we can actually, you know, fight with?
I would say a scapegoat, right? Because interestingly enough, there were a couple of statements from the federal government here that blamed the Obama administration, the previous presidential administration. And I was thinking, you know, as someone who spends a great deal of time investigating conspiracy theories, I have a hard time believing, political leanings aside, that at some point during his presidency, the Obama administration said, hey, let's release a pandemic in 2020, and then did like the steepled their fingers all Monty Burns style. That's just ridiculous. And you're right. You're not only right about this country, dude, but other countries, as we'll find later in this episode, other countries have been doing the same thing. It's a global phenomenon. It's unfortunate, it's laughable, and it has a very it has very real potential to lead to human deaths. So this, like, you know, here in Atlanta, we've seen Asian American members of the population get verbally abused, even not here in Atlanta that I know of, but in parts of the U.S. In parts of this country, there are people who are getting the crap beat out of them because they happen to look. To their racist abusers, to these criminals, they happen to look Asian. And that's truly a disgusting thing, but I think it's also indicative of that underwhelming fear, or that underlying fear. You know, people want something, like you're saying, people want something else to blame. They want something they can hit. That's the same reason why, and I'll say it, we don't talk about it too much on the show, but I'll say it, that's the same reason why the tragedy of September 11th, 2001 led to a large scale military operation in countries that had nothing to do with the tragedy. We needed someone to blame, something to react to. You know what I mean? Am I sounding crazy?
No. That's exactly what it is, Ben. I mean, because you can't fight, you know, a virus. You can't really be angry at a virus. You know, you can't shake your fist at it and call it horrible names. I mean, you could, but it's a lot easier to assign blame to a country that maybe we don't fully understand, or maybe we already are at odds with and culturally different than in many other ways. It's just kind of an easy scapegoat, like you say. And to see that violence happen and actually playing out with actual neighbors, you know, and people that live with us and next to us is really, really sad. And that's I just can't handle that. It's just taking a terrible situation and just making it worse and allowing it to just poison daily life and create this toxic environment. I mean, they're already, you were talking about the headline at the top of the show about the gentleman that was being accused of, I believe, terrorist threats for, you know, coughing on people. I mean, I'm seeing fights breaking out at grocery stores where people are like, you know, stay away from me or I'll, you know, hit you. I mean, this is the race thing. This is literally just people being scared, and the atmosphere is already one of paranoia and fear. To introduce that hatred into it is just more than I can handle.
You know, a great way to contract COVID-19? Get in a close combat situation with somebody.
Yeah, true.
So, like, maybe lay off everybody out there. I'm going to put something out here because I know we need to move on. This is just something. I guess more of a shower thought, let's say. What if this is part of our super organisms' move toward the evolution of our species and toward the bringing on of the singularity, where I would say a ton of people out there working in some form of coding, some form of situation where you only need a computer and an internet connection can function with their job specifically to assist in some kind of electronic or artificially intelligent field. Those jobs are secure. Those people will continue to function, and that machine will continue to run just perfectly in this situation. No matter what the pandemic, you can run that stuff as long as the major systems of electricity and interconnectivity are functioning.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. What do you think?
I see what you're saying, because there's no question that we are in. I'll take ownership of this because I screwed up and introduced the phrase, but we are going to enter a new normal. You know, imagine a world where people are so averse to physical interaction, that the majority of people you interact with, you do so through an online platform or some sort of distancing like a telephone or a video conference, and you only meet people in person on rare, almost ritualistic occasions. You know, you'll date someone for years online, and then maybe you meet when you move in together and put your weird VR battle stations in the same room, and that's true love.
It's not like we don't have a head start already. I mean, you know what I mean? We're so isolated in that way through technology already. I mean, even my daughter, you know, so much of her interactions and her friendships are internet-based. I just took her to see a movie with a friend that she told me it was her friend she'd known for years, and I realized they were meeting for the first time in person that night at that movie. It was a friend she made like on this TikTok app of somebody local. And then before any parents out there say you're crazy to let your daughter, it was somebody, it was a mutual friend of another friend. It wasn't just some rando person on the internet. But I was shocked when she said, oh yeah, I haven't met her in person before. And she'd known her for like over a year. I just thought, you know, it's a very, we do have a head start towards that extreme version of the society that we're already living in right now that you're describing, you know?
Yeah, agreed. As a matter of fact, you know, many of us are big fans of podcasts, you know, both making them and listening to them. And to your point about head start, you know, we have just the four of us, we have forged what we feel are sincere relationships with many of our fellow listeners, people that we have never met, but we know stuff about each other, the kind of details friends know, you know. So shout out to Simon Workman, for instance. Shout out to multiple people who, like, we talk to each other. We are a community, which will come into play later.
And quick shout out to Blake, who got a weird call from me last night while I was in my car.
Yeah.
Hope you're doing well. Hope everything's going well, buddy.
Yeah. And I think that's tremendously important, because the human connection, our souls, if you want to use that word, should not be bound by geography, should not be bound by location. And before I get too TED talky, I do want to put in one more bad scenario. I'll just plant a seed and we can move on to good stuff. One more incredibly plausible bad scenario that everyone should be thinking about is this. This is the perfect opportunity for an authoritarian government to crack down on something. This is also the perfect opportunity for a republic or a democracy to shift to an authoritarian mode of governance.
Oh, and speaking of head starts, we kind of have that too, don't we? In place right now. In terms of the climate, the political climate right now, you know, I'm not seeing inklings of moving towards that, but you're right. It wouldn't take much, Ben. It wouldn't
take
much.
You're not seeing? Are you not seeing?
Oh, boy. No, but really, honestly, guys, how is the November election going to happen?
Oh, that's it. I've been working on some stuff there. I want to pitch you guys on this. I'm going to say it's not looking good.
I know we're a long way away. We're a long way away from that.
Are we, Matt? Are we?
But relatively, and given the severity of what's going on, and depending on what we see in just the next few days or weeks, especially months, we could be in a real situation where we have to, like we suspended tax day here in the United States, or we pushed it back at least. We pushed back all kinds of... just within, you know, personally, healthcare deadlines and things like that, all kinds of things like that are getting pushed back. Why would the November election not end up getting pushed back? For how long? What does that look like? What does that mean? How does that change stuff that's written in the Constitution? It's a really weird place we're going to.
So why is it okay to do the census online, but we can't vote online? I've always wondered that. I've always wondered why there wasn't more of a robust vote from home situation, or like, it seems very antiquated the way we conduct elections.
The technology and the deployment of technology in the voting process, again, here in the United States, is often moving at a glacial pace, because every every side capable of having voice in there, every side capable of making a decision, has an agenda. You know, it's like a company. A corporation's goal is to make its shareholders happy, make a year-over-year profit, right? That's how capitalism works. A political party's goal is going to tend to be to strengthen the position of that political party. Therefore, they're going to be adverse to moves that they see as helping, quote unquote, the other side, and they're going to be very bullish on moves that they see as giving them an advantage. So when it comes to, it's like that old quotation from India, when elephants wage war, the grass suffers. Technologically, we absolutely could be voting online or be voting by mail, but the opportunities for corruption would have to be addressed in a substantive way. You know, to your point, Noel, we can clearly do it. The technology is there. We have the technology, as they used to say in the $6 million man. We don't have the legislation, and we frankly do not have enough honest caretakers of policy for that legislation to be created, to be approved, and to be implemented. Technology, as you know, longtime listeners, will always outpace legislation. I think it's fair to say, you know, that this government, again, just here in the U.S., is still kind of playing catch up to television. We never really figured out how to handle TV, and you know, let alone MySpace, let alone TikTok. It's a crazy time to be alive.
It's true. Should we silver lining playbook it now? What do you think?
Yeah, let's go for it. Good scenarios. Well, let's look at the things that came about due to the Great Depression. Great Depression, a horrific time in this country. It's weird that it's named the Great Depression for a lot of people. But things that came out of it were things like the New Deal. These are things that even the most, even people who find themselves on the most extreme version of the libertarianism scale can agree with. You know, the New Deal gave us a tremendous amount of infrastructure that did not exist before. It also gave people a tremendous opportunity in terms of employment. And the New Deal, in general, objectively, made the U.S. on the ground a better place. Did it open up doors for overarching Big Brother government control? Well, yeah, obviously. I mean, that stuff wouldn't pass this week. But who knows, a few months from now. So there could be a large-scale readjusting of U.S. society, at least, that is less cruel toward the majority of people living here. I don't know if that's wealth distribution. I don't know if that's better medical care. You know what I mean? There's a number of ways that could work out. But that's one possible good scenario. You know, and then to Matt's point, maybe we will finally assume humanity's role as a midwife or transitional stage to a more highly evolved life form. You know, the cyborgs, the singularity people, what would we call it? Would it be like instead of Homo sapiens, would it be like Homo, whatever means wise in Latin, right? Homo sagacious.
Yes.
I'm not sure.
It'll just be, you know, our metal selves, our electronic versions that somehow exist for longer periods and can do anything and everything that your phone can do. I wanted to give this to you guys really quickly. Bill Gates came forward yesterday, gave a bit of a TED talk, and said that the best case scenario within the United States is to have 6 to 10 weeks of total isolation from one another in order to minimize the economic impacts on the country. So like 6 to 10 weeks is the minimum amount that you could have in order to see recovery from an economic standpoint within 20 days after that.
And let's not forget, he should know. I mean, a lot of the work of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation is fighting disease in third world countries like malaria and all of that. So, I mean, I bet you this. I don't think Bill Gates says anything like just off the cuff like that. I mean, I'm sure there's some data going into that statement. He made a bit of a snark at the administration's, you know, very pie in the sky Easter reopen the country for business idea, and saying, oh, crazy, people are back out buying houses and going to restaurants, and oh, don't pay no mind to that pile of bodies over there or whatever. You know, I mean, he definitely has a pretty dark outlook on that idea from the government.
Yeah, I agree. I think a lot of people listening maybe hold a lot of distrust for billionaires such as Bill Gates in, you know, I would have to say personally, I feel that a lot of times. I think, you know, I think we all do a bit, but in a scenario like that, as Noel stated there, it is somebody who has worked with infectious disease across the world. So I've always
thought Bill seemed like one of the good ones, you know, I don't know. That's just my gut feeling about him as a person.
Remember that episode we did where it talked about how wealth kind of changes you as a person in a lot of ways? Not necessarily for everyone.
Sure.
No, but
I agree.
That always makes me a little suspicious.
I was holding back for a second, and before we move on, I want to point out something that may surprise you guys. Have you heard of Event 201?
No.
Okay, so back in October of 2019, Event 201 was hosted by the Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security. This focused on something eerily prescient: emergency preparedness in the event of a, quote, severe pandemic. I just want to plant that seed. I promise we'll come back to it because it has a place in the next act of today's episode. We've painted a little bit of a good, a bad scenario. Now we have to ask ourselves, what if there's more to the story? We'll answer this question after a word from our sponsor. Here's where it gets crazy. Conspiracy theories about the novel coronavirus are spreading almost as quickly as the infection itself. So we're going long today, so we can't get to everything that we have planned, but we've rounded up a few of the more prominent conspiracy theories making the news today. I want to let you know ahead of time, conspiracy realists, these do range in plausibility. Some of them are more likely to be true than others.
I'll go and get started here. Early on, as this story and this virus, it was all developing, there were so many people out there saying that the disease that develops from this virus is not real, that it's exaggerated, it's not that bad, or it's a hoax entirely. And it was something that was basically a story that was put in place to try and distract people from other things that were going on in the news or the world. And, you know, there were so many different things that people were pointing to, whether it was an election or, you know, industry and possible polluting problems and actual grim outlooks on that. It just spanned the gamut of things that this virus was distracting us from really looking at. And the first idea is that the threat, you know, is in some way exaggerated. We know now that that is certainly not the case.
Right. Yeah. So you named three kind of takes on the concept of a hoax: that it's entirely a hoax, or that it's exaggerated, entirely a hoax, or that it's a smokescreen, for lack of a better phrase. Yeah. You're right, Matt. It's not the case. In fact, it appears that leadership in most countries in the world did the opposite of exaggerating this. They initially underestimated this virus, both in terms of its transmission rate and in terms of its deadly nature. And a ton of people often for the best reasons ever. A ton of people were quick to try to quell alarmism around COVID-19 by saying, you know, it's no worse than the flu. You have probably seen this, fellow conspiracy realist. You've seen the statements on social media. Maybe one of your distant relatives gave you an email with like 17 forwards on it. Maybe you heard it from friends, especially during the early days. Whatever those people's intentions were, they were categorically, demonstrably incorrect. And now we have to tackle the concept that you've heard before, folks, that COVID itself is not exaggerated. It's not a smokescreen, or maybe it is, but it's entirely a hoax. All that stuff you're hearing on the news is made up. This is another thing people said often in the early days, and it's a view that some people maintain today. In fact, the president of the United States, the current president, called it a hoax earlier. Do you guys remember that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and it's crazy. I heard a thing on NPR the other day where it was, is it Hannity, who's kind of the real bullyish kind of pundit who tends to just like say some of these more outlandish claims. He literally said, parroting some of what the president had said, that this was a left-wing hoax intended to discredit the president and screw with his reelection prospects, right? And then, you know, the president had said something along those lines, obviously not quite that explicit, but then when the president came out, when things started getting real and started talking, and he started to kind of shifted and said, you know, sort of doing some revisionist history, saying, oh, my administration has been handling this, you know, with the utmost concern and attention from day one. Hannity then flipped his script and just started praising the president for his, you know, masterful handling of this pandemic. And I mean, talk about 1984, you know, doublespeak. I mean, it's just, it was mind-boggling to me.
I want to jump to the concept that President Trump called the coronavirus a hoax. Did you guys see the Snopes article on this?
I did, yeah.
So essentially, I'm just going to quote this so everybody hears this. He was discussing the coronavirus in late February of 2020 in South Carolina. And according to Snopes, he likened the Democrats' criticism of his administration's response to the coronavirus outbreak as their new hoax. So, quote, this is their new hoax. So he does, in a way, call it a hoax, but it's interesting. It's just interesting the way the wording goes to play there, but he's certainly downplaying the severity and the importance of it.
Well, the president later press conferences, and I have the timeline available. If you want this, just write to me. I'll send it to you. He later denied making that statement the way it was advertised in the press, and he argued that it was mischaracterized on purpose. This leads us to something important, and it's why I'm really glad you brought up the Snopes article, Matt. I know that we have to cut a lot of conspiracies in today's episode, but for this is a tool you can use when you're attempting to determine the veracity of any claim, whether it's flat earth to what sandwich your friend had on Thursday. Your first step has to be finding sources that argue for or against a statement. Then you compare them. So at this point, you'll still find people arguing that COVID-19 itself is entirely a hoax. And you can consider them a primary source for that opinion or that viewpoint. However, if you look at the other side, you will find many, many, many more people with firsthand experience from either contracting the illness or combating it in the new front line of this global war, hospitals, clinics, and ERs across the planet. Those people will all argue that this is very much real. So regardless of what we all may want to be true, the sheer mass of verifiable, proven sources indicate that COVID is no hoax. But to that third question you raised, Matt, what if this is an opportunity?
Yeah, this is even more disturbing, and it's something that we really need to spend a little bit of time on. So while COVID probably wasn't planned by a nation or an institution, some kind of biological warfare conspiracy, it certainly presents an opportunity for some unethical behavior, like we talked about earlier. Here are some of the hypothetical examples, and this goes, again, with our discussions earlier. Shut down protests. Can't have people gathering, so no protests, right? Depriving people of their civil rights, under the guise of it being a public health measure, right?
You could also try and pass some kind of controversial legislation. We're seeing how well, as we discussed earlier, the left and right encamped sides of the United States government and Congress are functioning right now, just as everyone's coming together. Maybe you could use this as a way to get something through, slip it through while we're all working together.
Did we talk about this on a previous episode, the insider trading that's going on and how no one's getting in trouble for it?
It's insane. I mean, look, to me, the thing you just described, Ben, is like the political equivalent of price gouging, like medication that would cure people. You know, I mean, it is so immoral. I can't even handle it. And the whole insider trading thing. I mean, there was a lawmaker from here in Georgia who just got popped for it.
Senator Loeffler. Yeah,
that's right. Yeah. And they had downplayed the threat and then went to this briefing and then, sold off millions of dollars worth of stock. And how that's not insider trading, I don't know. It is. It 100% is.
It is. But there are a lot of loopholes. So just to name names. And so everybody doesn't feel like we're picking on one senator because they happen to be from our state. The names that we know now, the four senators across the board who lied to the public while they were dumping their own stock fortunes like a fire sale are these. Senator Burr, Senator Feinstein, Senator Loeffler, and Senator Inhofe. There's another thing we got to talk about. This is a fantastic opportunity. If you're a overarching government, this is a fantastic opportunity to nationalize private businesses. In a time of crisis, many governments are opening the door we're making laws or we're activating laws that open the door to widespread nationalization of key industries like energy, transit, medical manufacturing, even agriculture. Now, there are some people, of course, who will say, well, that would be a fantastic thing. But of course, on this show, we're of the mind that fantastic things are even more fantastic when they're transparent. And of course, there's another opportunity to crack down on minority or opposition groups. This is all happening at once, but it's stuff to be aware of. One thing I wanted to ask you guys about, Matt, Noel, was something I was surprised to find people so ardent about. It is the concept of 5G and the coronavirus. Have you guys heard about this?
I have not been.
So multiple people, this surprised me too, Noel, multiple people have been proposing a link between COVID-19 and 5G technology. I guess we should pause for a second. I'm going to defer to you, Matt. What exactly is 5G? We hear the name thrown around a lot, but like on the most like bare bones level, what the heck is that stuff?
I literally have no idea.
It's one more than 4G.
It's something that we need to discuss with Jonathan Strickland and have him on to discuss that. I think we've been mentioning it a couple times to him, so hopefully we can get him on to truly explain to us what 5G is.
Is it like fundamentally different than 4G? Is it a completely different transmission medium?
It's going to be rolled out a lot differently, where the signals are going to be transferred back and forth from your devices. They're going to be located in different places throughout your neighborhood or wherever you live. It's slightly different frequency bands. There's all kinds of interesting stuff there, and it's way too much to unpack right now. But just know that it is a slightly different version of what you're using for your cell phone right now, unless you're already using 5G.
Yeah, we have an episode on this where the research is still solid from February 13th of 2019 called Cell Phones, 5G, and Cancer. Which goes into some of the nuts and bolts of how 5G works. But I think knowing this, we know you know, you don't have to go back and listen to that episode. Of course, we would love it, because every time you listen to an episode, our boss sends us a personal text and says, we have one more day before we're fired. So please tune in. The thing about 5G that should trip everybody up when we hear this is the concept that somehow a wireless phone field could what? Accelerate or exacerbate the spread of a virus. Here's the initial connection. So the PRC, China, turned on some of its first 5G networks in December of 2019. And people who are, you know, picking up that kind of xenophobic vibe you described earlier, Noel, they're quick to say, well, you know, the coronavirus, if it's real, came from China. And they also turn on their 5G networks for the first time. So they attempt to draw a link between the two, a causal link. We have specific examples of the kind of stuff which that people are talking about in this regard, and you can watch it for yourself on Facebook. Heck, you can join. We found a group that you can join.
Yeah, it's a Facebook group called Stop 5G UK Facebook Group.
Very creative name. Yeah, you know, I mean, these kind of conspiracy theories abound whenever there's some kind of new tech that comes out, and especially, you know, people are very skittish about the idea of things transmitted through the air. But yeah, I think, you know, 4G is approximately a gigabit Ethernet connection equivalent, and 5G would be like multiple gigabit speed. But you're right, the infrastructure is different, but we should get Jonathan Strickland in to talk about it. But this whole concept seems like a stretch to me.
As Ben mentioned, we did talk about it, but we talked about it well before it was ever actually turned on. So I'm very much interested in seeing how it's developed, how it is actually rolling out, because I don't know if you guys remember, we had that gentleman on here named David Icke. Do you remember what he told us about 5G?
What did he say, Matt? Refresh my memory, please.
He gave us a dire warning about 5G and how it was one of the most terrifying things that was coming, and it was going to spell essentially the end of the world.
I'm going to go on record and say, you know, that feels a little alarmist. Again, I'm not an expert. That interview, I can't remember if we did it before the 7-year study came out that was attempting to debunk these worries. But I also want to point out that, you know, when you and I on that interview asked David Icke about his accusations of anti-Semitism, he still didn't. I don't know, man. I don't know. I don't know if he's the best source.
Oh, I'm not saying he's the best source. I'm just saying, in my mind, what is repeating is what David Icke said to us. And he was saying that it was going to harm people. And I can see why a Facebook group, maybe that was either listening to David or other people talking about 5G, would then connect those two. Given that China did activate quite a bit of its 5G networks in that time frame, right around December 2019.
Are we really calling into question the origin of the COVID-19?
No, that is not what I'm doing.
No, not you. I just mean this theory seems to do that fundamentally. What is the notion that all of that is just smoke? And that it's just a cover up for the real bad actor, which is this technology?
I would just say it's a really bad coincidence that happened to line up in a time frame with some of these fears.
I would say also to your point, while we're playing some Pepe Silvia, which is a great idea for a board game that we'd come out with if I didn't think Always Sunny would sue us. But while we're playing Pepe Silvia, I want to point out that that David Icke was right about the pedophilia in the United Kingdom. No matter what you want to say about the guy, you can call him a crank or whatever, but he was 100% right about the active cover-up of child abuse for decades in the United Kingdom. And also, spoiler alert, if you don't want to listen to all the episodes, yes, the people who did that are going to get away. They're apparently above the law. But being, you know, a broken clock can be right twice a day, right? So this doesn't mean he's automatically right about 5G predictions. The people who are claiming that 5G is what they tend to claim is that the deleterious health effects of 5G are being conflated with the symptoms of coronavirus. So to your point, Noel, the people who believe this, ultimately, the majority of them are arguing that coronavirus was not actually a virus at all. They say it's just, it's something the media is using to cover up illnesses and death attributed to exposure to 5G technology. There's one example of this, a guy named Mark Steele, who I think is an excellent just snapshot here, because we have to remember a lot of the people participating with the 5G coronavirus conspiracy have just sort of folded this enormous global panic into their pre-existing opposition to 5G. Mark Steele was making waves all the way back in 2018 because he said his local city council was causing pregnant women to miscarry when they were walking under street lamps that were outfitted with 5G technology. The local government, by the way, rejected his allegations. There's no proven link between the tech and COVID. There's also no proven link, furthermore, of any single case of wireless technology spreading a viral infection in general. You know what I mean? There's no, like, nobody got a viral infection because they heard a telegraph message, if that makes sense.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Like, you know, sure, I could see blaming or you know, being concerned about other health risks associated with this stuff because it hasn't been tested and we haven't really seen it rolled out. And, you know, the idea that cell phones cause cancer, we've done episodes on that. And that's a little bit the jury's kind of out, but there's some evidence that maybe there's some truth to that. But how does a transmission of data cause a viral infection or carry a novel, you know, virus?
The allegation there is that it is not a virus. It is just effects of the radiation emanating from the technology and the devices.
Shout out to everybody who just looked at your phone now and you saw that little 5G icon. Shout out to you. You're going to be okay. And here for now is where we leave it. Hang on, why weren't you guys talking about the religious allegations or the religious conspiracy theories? Why weren't you talking about the various panaceas and snake oil cures? Why aren't you talking about the fact that numerous governments have accused other governments of creating COVID-19 as a weapon? Well, our answer to that is that we have to save something for part three. Also, peek behind the curtain, Paul Mishcontrol is going to kill us if we make this like a 3-hour episode.
On the Google Hangout, we can see Paul's face down there below, and it looks like a smile, but I'm definitely reading it as a scowl right now.
No, that's just a still.
I know, but it just, I can't tell how angry it is, but it does look angry.
So apologies for not getting to a lot of things I know are very much on the front of our fellow listeners' minds today, but tune in because we will be doing a part three, which is even more of a deep dive into the conspiracy theories that we didn't get to today. I'm honestly sad about it because some of them are a little more plausible. And we're also going to be looking at the developing situation. At this point, again, March 25th, 2020, the scariest conspiracy remains the one we mentioned in our initial episode on COVID-19. China conspired to keep this quiet. Other countries conspired to downplay the long-term consequences and the threat of this, including the United States. And now the world collectively is paying for those decisions. We are paying for those conspiracies, and the bill has yet to come due.
So while you're hanging out wherever you are right now, staying safe and isolating yourself, make sure to reach out to us. We are available on the internet in a ton of places. We're Conspiracy Stuff on Twitter and Facebook. You can find our Facebook group. Here's Where It Gets Crazy. All just go there. We can talk about anything COVID or not COVID, and just discuss any episodes, give us ideas for new episodes. If you don't want to do that, go to Instagram. You can find us there. We are our Conspiracy Stuff Show.
You can also find us as individual human people. You can follow our quarantine stories, if you wish. Mine, you can find at Instagram. I am at How Now Noel Brown.
If you wish, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram. I'm doing some exciting projects on Twitter. I'd very much like you to be a part of them. Check out at Ben Bolin HSW. You can also follow my various misadventures on Instagram at Ben Bolin.
You can find me at The Untuned Djembe. Good luck. I should be there somewhere tweeting all day long.
Isn't that a King Djembe. Crimson song? I love that.
Oh, I don't know.
That's wonderful.
That's not really a thing. You cannot find me. Ha ha.
Do you have an untuned djembe? Is this a...
Yes, it's sitting right next to me.
I can't tell because it's very dark in the background there.
Yes, yes, yes. Purposeful, my friend.
I love it.
If you don't want to do any of that stuff, you can leave us a message. We have a number you can call. It is 1-833-STDWYTK. Give us a call, leave us a message, and you might be a part of the show, especially during these our new weird times. And if you don't want to do that, you can always send us a good old-fashioned email. We are
conspiracy@iheartradio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.